We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is the day after Super Tuesday, and we learned a lot from last night, and a lot that was, I think, predictable, which is that Biden and Trump won commanding victories across nearly all of the states holding the Democrat and Republican nominating contests on Super Tuesday. So both notched wins in delegate-rich states like California, Texas, Virginia, North Carolina, and the largest prizes out of the 16 states and one U.S. territory reporting the results on Super Tuesday. That coming, of course, from CBS. And in light of that, Nikki Haley has announced this morning that she will suspend her Republican presidential primary campaign in a speech this morning. Fox News Digital has confirmed. So the former South Carolina governor and United Nations ambassador, according to Fox, is scheduled to deliver remarks in Charleston, South Carolina at 10 a.m. Eastern time. She will make the announcement official in that speech, the Wall Street Journal first reported. According to other reports, she will not be endorsing former President Trump. So her remarks likely will contain her rationale for why she is not endorsing him, unlike Governor Ron DeSantis, who was the second leader in terms of the initial GOP primary when there was a larger number of candidates. And upon his exit, he did say rightly, I think, that the majority of the GOP base has decided to give Donald Trump a second chance. And so he will go along with that will of the people. And because he is a Republican and also signed that pledge, that he will endorse. So interestingly, Nikki Haley, in order to get onto the Republican debate stage, did have to sign that pledge because that was Ronna McDaniel, who will be stepping down. I think it's tomorrow. Tomorrow or Friday is when she had announced that her last day as RNC chair would be woohoo. Yes, and we can go woohoo on the show. And so Nikki Haley did sign that pledge to get onto the debate stage. So breaking that pledge, she's probably going to say, well, hey, you know, we thought Donald Trump really didn't take it seriously either in 2016. But of course, he won, so was never tested with that. But the best line out of Nikki Haley came from our producer, our great producer, Adam, which, of course, I borrowed and tweeted. Sometimes people shadow write tweets for me and they're great. But I have to give him credit for this. Will the next sham lawfare against Trump be an assault case from Nikki Haley for being beat so bad last night? That made us all laugh this morning. So it was great. So Trump is basically the GOP nominee now, and that has come as no surprise, I think, after Iowa, which, of course, was the first state to have caucuses, and then New Hampshire, the first state to actually vote. Not just Super Tuesday, which was 15 states, 13 caucuses, 13 primaries, and two caucuses, rather. Last night, usually Super Tuesday is more of an indication of where the GOP is going to go in an open primary. But after Iowa, it was pretty clear, and especially then after New Hampshire. And so, you know, for all of my audience and the people who are regulars with us in the morning here at AFR, you know that I have endorsed Governor DeSantis initially in the primary. I thought that the GOP should go a different direction, and especially with all of the lawfare that has been leveled against Donald Trump. If you missed my conversation with Steve Dace earlier this week, it was just, he said it so perfectly, that basically the GOP is playing into the Democrats' hands by continuing this entire narrative of, you know, insurrection and all of this stuff surrounding the events of January 6th. And it's going to continue for the Democrats to try to push that narrative. And he explained that so well. I would encourage you to go back and listen to that show if you missed it. One of the reasons I think that Nikki Haley is actually suspending her campaign is not because she lost so badly on Super Tuesday, and there were more states, including her home state of South Carolina, that she did not win, but because of the Supreme Court opinion that was handed down Monday. That did not, rightly, did not kick Donald Trump off of the primary ballot under this really ridiculous 14th Amendment theory that he engaged in an insurrection when there was no criminal charge to that effect, you know, nothing that the Supreme Court of Colorado really could hang their hat on, and went antithetical to the language in the amendment itself that said the Congress has to legislate in order to enforce that article. So because the Supreme Court ruled that way on Monday, I think that actually was what Nikki Haley was waiting for, because if Trump had been kicked off the ballot, then she would have been the next in line with delegates, and she would have been able to, in her mind, take over the GOP race. And so I think that I think, and it's just, of course, my opinion and speculation, that it has a lot more to do with the Supreme Court opinion than it does Super Tuesday. But this, now that we have Donald Trump, and this is going to be a Trump versus Biden contest unless something else happens, I've seen enough. And this is what I posted yesterday in the midst of this article that came from the Daily Mail. And we're actually going to talk about this much more in depth in the next segment. This is just a ridiculous admission from the Biden administration. The Biden administration admits flying 32,000 migrants secretly into the United States to reduce the number of crossings at the border, and has national security vulnerabilities. This is just absolutely insane how the Biden administration is not protecting the border, and now has admitted through, and this is coming through a lot of FOIA requests, and again, we're going to get into this more in the next segment with my guest, who knows a lot more about this story, because it's his reporter that actually broke this story. But flying 320,000 migrants. I mean, and Steve Dace also posted this, that 9/11 took 20 people. So this is 1,800% more than that. This not only is a national security risk, but as we've been discussing for the last several months, and members of Congress like Speaker Johnson have been discussing for a lot longer than that, the main reason that Biden isn't protecting the border is because the Democrats want to create more Democrat voters. They want to fundamentally transform this country. And it is no secret that I did not think that President Trump was the best selection for the GOP. I think there are a lot of issues that could have been better addressed by someone like a Governor DeSantis. But here we are, right? And so I've also been following RFK Jr., and I like a lot of what he says, but not enough of his policies align with actual conservative values for me personally to support him. So this is just my personal opinion that I tweeted out yesterday, actually before the results of Super Tuesday, and more in line with reading this article and just overall looking at the situation that we find ourselves in. This is what I said. I've seen enough. This is despicable and a blatant attempt to destroy America and give Democrats power. We cannot let this stand. The Supreme Court did the right thing constitutionally yesterday for the rule of law. Trump remains on the ballot and will be the GOP nominee. I vastly preferred DeSantis for many policy reasons, but he is right that the majority of the GOP wanted to give Trump another chance. I will support Trump over Biden. There isn't a third-party candidate that is viable and supports my values overall. I like RFK Jr. a lot, but not enough. I've always said I will use my vote and my voice for the best available choice in public offices. And among the choices we have, Trump is absolutely better than 4 more years of this ridiculous Biden regime. I'll still call out Trump and his advisors on policy issues like I have been, or give them credit when they're right, like I have been, because I am loyal to the principles of conservatism and America, not to a specific politician. It's why I supported Trump in 2016 when many claimed I couldn't be a Christian and support him. And by the way, I didn't support him initially in the primary. I was a Ted Cruzer. And then when he won the nomination, and actually shortly before he won the nomination, I heard him speak and was persuaded and became a supporter. And then especially when he won the nomination, because, of course, I was not going to support Hillary Clinton. So I supported him in 2016 and then, of course, had the opportunity to work for him, get to know him, and then supported him again in 2020. And so I ended it with this, but I'm on the Team America train and always will be. We can't let Biden win a second term. So that's my perspective. And I know that there is a lot of controversy, and Christians and conservatives will take various positions. And if you are a person that still wants to see more from Team Trump, I would agree that I don't think he is necessarily persuaded me in terms of trying to earn my support as a DeSantis supporter. But at the same time, I'm just looking at reality. And I know that reasonable people absolutely can disagree. And for those who just can't support Trump either yet, or we get all the way till November and you just can't support Trump again, and so you pick a third party or you choose to abstain, I do not think it is a question of Christianity at all that we all have to support a nominee from a specific party. I do believe that we should use our vote to the best of our ability and to discharge that duty as an American citizen and be good stewards of our vote. And this is why we have AFA Action to inform. And this is not just the presidential ticket. It's all the way down. And how you discharge that duty is a matter of conscience. And I think it's a matter of wisdom. And I will always give you my personal opinion, even though obviously here at AFA, we don't, as a nonprofit, endorse any candidates or, say anything like that. But in my personal capacity, I'll always give you my opinion. And I will also encourage you to vote and to vote your values and to vote your convictions and to do your research, to not just take what I say or anybody, certainly from the mainstream media. This is a personal thing. And there are a lot of people, a lot of very contentious division that has been within and among conservatives at large, not just within the GOP. I'm not a registered Republican, and I haven't been since 2021. I'm unaffiliated. And that's because I don't think that the Republican Party currently represents my values that I can sign on and say I am a Republican, with the whole big tent issue with trying to say, there's pride coalitions, the LGBT stuff with Caitlyn Jenner, being a spokesperson for the Trump campaign. I disagree as a Christian with all of that. But I also recognize that this is a closed universe situation. And if, for example, Sonia Sotomayor, in her role as a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court, can put aside everything else and simply discharge her duty in her role. I was incredibly proud of the leftist judges on the Supreme Court for doing the right thing, regardless of what they likely personally think of Donald Trump. They did the right thing. And that was actually, to me, a great example and part of the impetus for me to finally just say, I think that in this closed universe situation that it is now going to be a Trump versus Biden, unless, something unexpected changes, and it may be Trump versus somebody else, but it will be Trump. And whoever the Democrat is, conservatism is better than leftism. So for those reasons, I will always discharge my duty in my role as a conservative, as a Christian, in the best way possible. And there are still many things that I disagree with President Trump on, and I'll continue to call him out because, again, my loyalty is to conservatism. But I will support, ultimately, the best candidate. And that, in my opinion, is not Joe Biden and is not a Democrat. And by the way, if Chris Christie had won the GOP nomination and it was Christie versus Biden, or even Haley versus Biden, I'd probably end up supporting them because that would be the best choice among the options that we have. So think about that and think about our duty as Christians to discharge our vote in the best way possible while still holding all politicians accountable. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis and Jenny. Last year, because of you, Preborn's network of clinics saw over 58,000 babies saved. Thank you to all who made this possible. Let's celebrate these precious babies. Daisy and her husband decided they never wanted kids. When she found out she was pregnant, she immediately thought abortion. But after she and her husband met her baby on an ultrasound and heard the heartbeat, their hearts melted and they chose life. Her baby, Jeffrey, is healthy and beautiful. Daisy and her husband can't even imagine life without him. Each of these babies are truly miraculous, and every day, Preborn celebrates 200 miracles. $28 a month can be the difference between the life and the death of a child. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection that doubles the baby's chance at life. Let's join together and help mothers choose life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And I had previewed in the last segment that we would be talking more in depth about this story from the Daily Mail, and the headline, Biden administration admits flying 320,000. Yes, 320,000. I initially said 32,000, but at least corrected myself. We always need more coffee this early. But it is 320,000 migrants secretly into the United States to reduce the number of crossings at the border has national security vulnerabilities. And initially, this came from the Center for Immigration Studies and their reporter. So I am very excited to have Mark Krikorian on with us now. He's the executive director at the Center for Immigration Studies. So Mark, this came from a FOIA request, is my understanding. I mean, what exactly is going on here?
Yeah, we this program, they had, the administration had announced but hadn't really, you know, drawn any attention to it, and they hadn't released how many people were coming through this program. Some of your listeners may have heard of something called CBP-1. It's a app that this administration is letting illegal aliens schedule their illegal immigration, literally, at the border with Mexico. This is like part two of that program, where people who aren't at the border, some of them may be back in their home countries, in Venezuela, Colombia, Ecuador, wherever, there's nine countries that are covered, they can schedule their illegal immigration and then fly over the border directly into the United States. And the administration had not revealed how many people had used this, so we submitted a Freedom of Information Act request, and they did tell us 320,000 people last year, last calendar year. What they still won't tell us, and the reason this was so alarming, even more alarming than that, is that they won't tell us what airports they're going to, because the flow of people, the volume of these inadmissible aliens, people who have no right to be here who are being let in, is creating security vulnerabilities at these airports. And the administration said they didn't want to tell us because that would help bad actors exploit these security vulnerabilities that they are creating through this program, which isn't even legally allowed.
This is absolutely insane. I mean, in no other context does the federal government allow someone, including American citizens, to schedule committing a crime and say, sure, we're going to help you. I mean, it's literally like the Biden administration is saying, okay, robbers, you can schedule your bank robbery and we will provide the transportation for you to and drive you to the bank, let you commit your crime, and then drive you back after. I mean, how on earth are they getting away with this?
The rationale is, as you said in the setup, that these people would be coming across the border illegally anyway, And so let's let them in, quote, legally, unquote, under a power, the loophole the president has called parole, immigration parole. It's not from, it's a different thing from the criminal justice parole. The thing is, that power is supposed to be limited to emergency cases, individual cases. Somebody's appendix burst on the border and you need to get them to the nearest hospital and there's no time for a visa. Or some criminal who's barred from getting a visa, but you need him to testify in a trial. So the president has the authority to let, you know, one at a time, somebody like that in, take them to the courtroom, they say their piece, then you take them back. That's what that's for. This administration has used it to let in hundreds of thousands of people, and there have been state lawsuits to stop it, and the courts have basically said, yeah, this may be illegal, but you don't have standing in court to challenge it, so basically they can do whatever they want until a political solution, either Congress or the voters, stop them.
I'm speaking with Mark Krikorian, who is executive director at the Center for Immigration Studies, and this is a complete failure of the justice system. Then, what's the rationale that states don't have standing? I mean, is this because they can't necessarily prove that some of these flights are coming into their states? Is it a matter of evidence, or what's the rationale there?
Well, it's that they have to demonstrate that they have been specifically harmed. I mean, because, I mean, you know, you're the lawyer, not me. But the point is that you have to demonstrate that you have suffered a particular harm in order to bring a lawsuit. And the courts have basically said that states, that the administration, you know, can essentially not enforce the law. And in this case, and just get away with it because you can't demonstrate a specific harm that you have suffered. This is frankly a shortcoming in the law. One of the things that has been floated in various proposals is to create a right of action, which is to say create a right for states to sue if the federal government in certain immigration areas doesn't do what it's supposed to do. But that's unfortunately not the case right now.
Yeah, and this is so frustrating when there are cases that are kicked out on the basis of standing because when there's clearly a harm, but the court basically uses it as a loophole. And just for listeners, you know, what you're talking about, Mark, is an injury, in fact, or a particularized harm that means essentially that the injury is of a legally protected interest, which is concrete and particularized, actual or imminent, and this would seem to be pretty imminent, and there also has to be a causal connection between the injury and the conduct brought before the court. And so it seems like the justice system is just waiting to say, well, you know, for more young nursing students to be murdered by illegal aliens, or for more crimes to be committed, and then do kind of a case-by-case basis, rather than say this whole program is being used illegally. And so where is Congress in all this? Because as much as the slim Republican majority is perhaps trying through the impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas, that to me is kind of a petty solution rather than something with teeth, like trying to fix this loophole.
Yeah, the House of Representatives actually back in May passed a bill. H.R. 2 is the number of the bill, and so that's kind of the shorthand that people use to talk about it, that did a whole bunch of actual immigration control things, including limiting the president's parole power. In other words, fencing in what he's allowed to do. The problem with that Senate bill that got so much attention and crashed and burned is that it did nothing to restrict the president's power. In fact, it expanded the president's power to keep letting in people who are not allowed to be here. So the House has actually, you know, done what it can do, again, with its tiny three-vote or whatever majority. The problem is that the Republicans in the Senate got rolled, basically, by Chuck Schumer and the Democrats and put together this ridiculous bill that would have actually made things worse instead of doing a whole variety of things the House bill did, including limit the president's ability to basically let in anybody he wants to let in for any reason, in any number, anytime he feels like it, which is, obvious, which is on its face contrary to the whole premise of immigration law.
I'm speaking with Mark Krikorian, who's the executive director at the Center for Immigration Studies, and you have this article that is actually a lot more thorough than what the Daily Mail posted, and the title there is Government Admission, Biden Parole Flights Create Security Vulnerabilities at U.S. Airports. So what, in your view, is the best solution right now? I mean, is it more legislation from Congress? Can there be additional FOIA requests to actually get the specific airport names so that maybe there can be a particularized harm for other lawsuits? Or are we just going to have to kind of sound the alarm and hope that enough voters come out against this as a main priority for security, but wait until November?
Yeah, I guess I'd say all of the above. We're actually suing DHS, the Homeland Security Department, to get this information. Because when you submit a request, a Freedom of Information Act request, initially you just send them a letter. And sometimes they just give you the information. But if they don't, there's certain hoops that have to be jumped through, then you can sue them in court. And we're suing them to get this information of where these people are going to and which airports they're actually coming from as well. And, you know, Congress obviously has a role to play. Congress is Article 1 of the Constitution. They're supposed to be making the law. The problem is that the Democrats don't believe in the legitimacy of immigration law. And I don't mean that even in some particular part of the law. The mainstream Democratic view now is very different from what it used to be, is that the American people have no right to keep people out, that immigration law is basically the same as Jim Crow, and it's perfectly fine with them that the president is subverting it. And if you can't get half of Congress to go along, well, what can you do about it? So ultimately, it really is going to have to come down to elections, not just the presidential election, but congressional elections. Because, look, the root cause of this problem is taking a nap in the White House. And that until that changes, you can only deal with this sort of at the margins.
And Mark Krikorian, that is such an excellent point, that the Democrats don't believe in immigration law, and they have a fundamentally different view under this guise of, you know, humanitarianism or lack of sovereignty for the U.S., and that everyone should just be able to come here and under, you know, the great American dream and all of those kind of mythical nonsense that they're applying in a way that is contrary to what the purpose of government is, which is to preserve the rights for American citizens that come from God, our creator. And that's the reason we have legitimacy in government. And yet we're seeing, you know, this stemmed all the way back to President Obama and, you know, some of his policies that ultimately the court said he can't just have kind of the same view on DACA, for example, where Congress never legislated on it. And he just used that whole view of just saying, well, I'm not going to rule on a case-by-case basis and allow immigrants to stay who were brought here illegally as minors, but just kind of have this broad blanket, sure, everybody can stay. And the Supreme Court said no, it's an overbroad use of that particular power, and the declining to prosecute has to be a case-by-case basis. And so are any of these cases perhaps on their way soon to go up to the Supreme Court so that maybe we could at least get that type of ruling to say, well, no, this still has to be on a case-by-case basis for immigration parole rather than, you know, 320,000 migrants? I mean, that's clearly not on a case-by-case basis. That's just a broad blanket.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of parole, like you said, is supposed to be one at a time. And the idea of having a parole program is a contradiction in terms. There should be no such thing. And yet, you know, when they release the regulations or the memos on these issues, they say, we're doing it on a case-by-case basis because you have to do it one at a time in some sense. In other words, they're playing word games. And Congress's job has to be to write the law to make it hard for an executive to play word games. We'll see. The DACA case is supposed to actually reach I'm pretty sure, I forget what the schedule is, but it should be reaching the Supreme Court at some point. And I mean the substance of the case, not the various procedural things that have gone on. And it's obviously illegal. But look, it's been around now for 12 years. And that's just sort of demonstrates my point about how if the Democrats in Congress want something like this, a violation of the law by the president, to stand, you can't, you know, it's hard to stop them if they are all willing to go along with it. And like I said, ultimately, this has got to come down first to elections and then to writing statutes that are simply harder to wiggle out of. You can't just add a few adjectives to the provision, which is what Congress has done in the past to various immigration provisions to try to tighten them up. And so they add more adverbs and adjectives to it. That's not going to work. You need to have bulletproof limits on what the president can do. For instance, he can only give parole, you know, on individual emergency cases for these reasons, and he only gets $5,000 a year or something like that. That's it. Anything more than that is on its face illegal. That's Congress has to put a leash on the president, any president, when it comes to immigration, because they all want to basically just let in whoever they want for whatever foreign or domestic policy reason they feel like, and they think they have that power.
Yeah, and you made such a great point earlier, Mark Krikorian, that this isn't just about the White House. This also is about our separation of powers, because Congress needs to be that check on the executive. And if they're not doing their job, and we've talked about the judiciary, but if Congress isn't doing their job, then the president will get away with it. And so this also does come down to down ticket races. And so for everyone across the country who is listening right now, this is why primaries matter. This is why we have to support really good conservatives who aren't just kind of in name only, like, oh, I'm going to go to Washington and, you know, get work done. I mean, they have to understand some of these priorities for the nation. And then we have to do our job as we, the people, to get out and vote and ensure that we are using our voice to populate Congress with the types of representatives and senators that will take this seriously. This was the number one issue out of the exit polling in a lot of these primary states. And for reasonable Democrats, and there still are some, this is a priority still, and they don't like what Biden is doing. They don't agree with that definition of humanitarianism and disagreeing with immigration law just on face. And so for the reasonable Democrats, and certainly for conservatives, we need to elect better people. So Mark Krikorian, really, really appreciate this and calling attention to this. Executive Director at the Center for Immigration Studies, and you can find them at cis.org. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And if you are a fan of Doritos, the chip, yes, Doritos, which is owned by the larger umbrella parent company PepsiCo, you may want to think twice because Doritos was under fire yesterday. I'm not talking just about, you know, the fire versus the nacho cheese flavor, but they were actually under fire for hiring a transgender influencer for their campaign in Spain. So this wasn't within the United States, but of course that crossed the pond, and we all heard about this yesterday, particularly on social media. And not only was this transgender influencer obviously someone that conservatives would object to, but it was particularly debased because of the controversial tweets that this person had said in the past that were basically tantamount to fetishizing pedophilia, doing thuggish things to minors and things that I will not even repeat those tweets here on air because we all want to keep our breakfast down. But Doritos Spain has now terminated their relationship with transgender influencer Ivan Gonzalez Renato, who goes by the stage name Samantha Hudson, after the company came under intense backlash for posting a video on Instagram featuring Hudson. This coming from the New York Post. A spokesperson for Doritos Spain confirmed to Rolling Stone magazine that a short promo called Crunch Talks was posted on Sunday, then removed Monday. It emphasized that the video was not part of a larger brand ambassadorship campaign. The spokesperson also revealed that Hudson had been terminated from the company due to making controversial comments in the past. So the spokesperson said, "We've ended the relationship and stopped all related campaign activity due to the comments. We strongly condemn words or actions that promote violence or sexism of any kind." So, good for Doritos. Joining me now to discuss is our very good friend, Walker Wildman, who is, of course, the vice president here at the American Family Radio and our larger parent company, I suppose. We're a company, sort of, at least a company of players, perhaps in the Shakespearean sense, of AFA. But Walker, so I initially saw this before it was reported that Doritos fired this transgender activist. But why even hire this kind of ridiculous person in the first place?
Well, that's the golden question here, is why do these marketing firms, and this is what's happening here, for those who don't know, these marketing firms that these major corporations are hiring out, or sometimes they're internalized, these are hardcore left-wing marketing gurus, if you will. And so they're hiring some very degenerate people to push their products. So it really reflects the wokeness and the left-wing dominance in these marketing firms and these marketing departments. But yeah, why on earth we have to have a dude who thinks he's a girl that's promoted and advocated for pedophilia, why we have to have them to sell Doritos is quite beyond me. I mean, it doesn't make sense from any vantage point. And as a consumer, I'm tired of degenerate people pushing products. Like, why can't we just have normal people, like a mom and a dad with their kids eating Doritos? Why do we have to have people that are struggling with gender dysphoria and have promoted pedophilia to sell Doritos? I mean, it just doesn't make sense from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And you would think that companies like Doritos who want to sell their product and they want to make money. I mean, that's the whole idea of having a product under a capitalist model. We're still capitalists, not socialists, thankfully. But it doesn't make sense from that standpoint. And yet we're seeing how many companies, including very famously Bud Light, who had that transgender activist on the cover of their cans and all of this. And it really comes down to this idea of Marxism that is being embedded in the culture and therefore cultural Marxism, and all of these diversity, equity, and inclusion scorecards that the human rights campaign is promoting. And what I don't know, Walker, and I've tried to, I mean, I've asked people like James Lindsay, who is very much in this space, other conservatives who really follow these issues very prominently, and nobody can really get down to why any of these companies care more about a human rights campaign score than they do their own bottom line.
Yeah, well, it's all a part of the demonization of anyone who resists sexual deviancy. I mean, that's what this boils down to. HRC, Human Rights Campaign, they've been at this for decades, pushing and bullying corporations to fill out their survey and to promote this degenerate behavior within their corporation and in advertising, etc. So they've dominated the HR departments and the corporate boardrooms. And I would say that's because of twofold. I think the first reason is that they showed up and they bullied, and they had the mouthpiece media in their corner. The second reason is because Christians have largely been sitting on the sidelines. We haven't been showing up to corporate boardrooms, and that's one thing AFA is doing different here, is we're actually showing up at these shareholder meetings for these major corporations so that the Christians have a voice in the room. But this is an over, this is larger than Doritos, larger than Bud Light. This is just this is a display of the degenerate nature of our culture. And the fact that these companies and these marketing teams feel comfortable picking people that are just so, from a human standpoint, are so messed up on multiple levels. The fact that they that everybody sits in the room and goes, yeah, let's hire that dude who dresses like a girl. That's going to be great for Doritos. I mean, who on earth sits around and says that? But it's the echo chamber. It's the woke culture. And it's very, very degenerate. And as consumers, we just got to stop buying this garbage. I mean, we have to continue the Bud Light treatment, if you will, of these companies. Otherwise, they're just going to continue doing it, and they're going to continue doing it and continue pushing it. But this is really about an agenda. This doesn't have anything to do with marketing. This is about normalizing very wicked and degenerate behavior.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I'm really glad to hear that AFA is showing up at those shareholder meetings and making a difference. I wish that more conservative groups would do that so that we have a larger presence overall. And it seems like, so many other nonprofits and organizations will say, well, that's not necessarily our issue. That's not, necessarily within our wheelhouse. You know, you hear that so often, and that should not be the case, because this type of cultural Marxism that is designed specifically to normalize degeneracy, as you rightly put it, Walker Wildman, that cannot stand in a moral and upright society. And Christians have to take responsibility for doing more than just voting in the political space. This is not so much the civil government. This is more the rise of the oligarchs of capitalism and some of these giant companies. Yeah. And when you talk about saying, we need to do better by not participating in buying some of these products. I mean, it becomes very difficult. I was looking at a map and a graphic of how much PepsiCo, which is the owner of Doritos, how many brands they actually own. And so if you want to send a message just to Doritos, okay, people can stop buying just that one product. But would that necessarily impact the entire company?
Right. Yeah, no, there's no purist approach to this, because, I'm doing this interview on my Apple iPhone, and Apple's committed plenty of sins. There's no purist approach to this. People have to use their own discretion and their own wisdom. But we got to do something. It's kind of like elections. You can't win them all. You can't even vote in them all, depending on where you live. But you got to do something. You got to get off the couch and do something. And that's what we encourage Christians to do. We've been, from day one of American Family Association and American Family Radio, we've been all about Christian activism and encouraging Christians to let their voice be heard and to let our values be heard. And one other thing I want to note, Jenna, on this whole movement, and my grandfather was on to this and predicting this homosexual agenda from back in the 70s and 80s. I mean, he was one of the first ones to call this out. And everybody called him a conspiracy theory, and that'll never happen, and we'll never have same-sex marriage, and look where we are now. But the thing about sexual deviancy and sin in general is it knows no bound, that there is no limit. There's no stopping point, Jenna, where they say, okay, this is far enough. If we do this, that's really too bad. These folks have no moral compass, and that's why I've been writing recently through our newsletter and through some other writings and interviews that this is about normalizing pedophilia. This is where these folks are going. So first it was same-sex marriage, in air quotes, right, because two men really can't get married according to God's design. But let's just say same-sex, quote-unquote, marriage, that was the first stop. Well, before that, it was normalizing homosexuality. So now, then they went to boys and girls bathrooms in North Carolina within 6 months of the Supreme Court ruling. And then here we are, nearly 8 or 9 years later, and they want to normalize pedophilia and lower the age of consent. This is their words, not my words. This is what they say. So at some point, our society has to say enough.
And we needed to say enough back in the 70s and 80s, like your grandfather did. And you're absolutely right that Christians ceded too much ground, and we did not stand firm for traditional marriage and the proper definition of marriage enough. We still need to stand up for that. And I remember even it's now been only about a decade, but back in 2015 is when I wrote my book, The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution, and that was published in December of 2015. So of course that July, or June rather, was when the Obergefell versus Hodges decision came out from the Supreme Court that was about same-sex marriage, and we do put that in air quotes. And in that book, I said, you know, this is the path to degeneracy, and will end up that the left in just a few years, and it happened even sooner than I thought and would have predicted. So your grandfather was much wiser than me. But I said in that book that this is going to lead to trying to normalize pedophilia. And I remember getting lambasted for that and people saying that will never happen. You know, this love is love and it's two consenting adults and all of those ridiculous, you know, the safe, legal and rare. Right. And now we're to partial birth abortion on demand and abortion for convenience. The left always overplays their hand. They always move the goalposts. And so where we're at today, Walker, what can the Christian do to say enough is enough?
Yeah, well, the first thing that the believer or the Christian ought to be doing is they ought to be living consistent lives with Scripture. I mean, that's like less like Exhibit A or Step 1, if you will, on the path towards influencing culture in a positive way and really creating culture, is as Christians, we have to live consistent lives. And we have to understand what God's Word says about these issues. I mean, God created them male and female from the beginning, one for another. Marriage is between one man and one woman. If you're born a dude, you can't be a girl. It doesn't matter how hard you try or what kind of surgeries you have. So these are just fundamental biblical realities, and they're scientific and natural realities too, that you can see in nature. And so we've got to live consistent lives, consistent biblical lives. But then beyond that, we have to be positive influences in our culture and our society. And as my friend Abraham Hamilton III says, we have to create culture. I mean, as Christians, we're actually called to create culture, create a biblical, biblically minded culture in society. So we've got to be positive influences wherever we are, whether it be at work, at church, you know, or whatever type of social events we attend. We have to be positive biblical influences on our society, and we have to speak up in all of these areas of life, whether it be at city hall, at the school board meeting, you know, wherever we are, we have to be a voice for sanity, because where we're headed, Jenna, is towards no man's land. I mean, the way the left is taking this, the way the pagans are taking this, they're taking this straight to hell, straight to destruction. And I mean that quite literally. And this country, they want to destroy this country. They have no respect, no sympathy for our founding fathers, for the Constitution, and for our Judeo-Christian values. They want it utterly destroyed. And so if Christians and those of like mind do not intervene at the ballot box and the corporate boardroom and at City Hall, then we're going to turn around in 40 years and we're not even going to have a country. And that's not exaggerating. This type of moral depravity leads to no man's land.
Literally no man's land, because everything is now gender queer and there's no such thing as a man. So, you know, no man's land in that sense as well. But absolutely, so well said, and such a timely message, Walker Wildman, because we as Christians have to take a stand. And I know it's very easy to look at all of the depravity, all of the corruption, and think I can't do everything. And that's true. We can't do everything. And you know, and even, you know, from our influence here at AFA, you know, we still can't do everything. But this is why Abraham Hamilton III also very wisely says to live locally. And when we live locally and we are invested in our communities where God has placed us and in our circles of influence, you can make a difference. And if every Christian, imagine if every Christian across this country would live locally and, yeah, pay attention to the national news, we need to keep up with that, but actually make a difference in your community for people that you can reach, that you can invite over to your home, you will make a difference for the truth of the gospel of Christ and for eternity. So you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net. Make it a great day for the Lord and always walk in the light of freedom and continue to promote the truth of the gospel of Christ.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.